Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
To know that these people like hate me and want to see me dead and supported October 7th and still try to see them as just a civilian.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. Today's episode is being sponsored by Robinhood. Now, on this morning's live session on YouTube, I had a very interesting caller.
Hi, this is Maya. I followed you on TikTok as well.
Maya, what's up? Her name is Maya, and she happens to serve in the Israeli Defense Force. She is a dual U.S. and Israeli citizen, and she answered the call after October 7th, going back home to Israel in order to fight Hamas. Now, I've known Maya for a couple months through the internet. However, it wasn't until today at the very end of her phone call that she dropped this on me.
And I don't know if you know any of the IDF units, but look up 669.
Okay.
And I'm attached to their medic. So, yeah.
Nice. Now, I have stolen this clip from the Unpacked channel here on YouTube to give you kind of an idea on what exactly it is Unit 669 does.
For those serving in 669, the Israeli search and rescue unit, a day can be unpredictable. One moment, they can be rescuing a hiker in the Negev. Then 20 minutes later, they can be on their way to Lebanon to save a downed pilot behind enemy lines. Sitting in a helicopter, a 669 operator often has no idea what their mission will be. 669, the IDF's Airborne Combat Rescue and Evacuation Unit, is dispatched when things go horribly wrong. They have to be ready for anything. Mountain rescues, diving missions, even armed combat. 669 is one of the IDF's elite special forces units.
Now, I don't have to stress to you what a big deal it is to have somebody call in from that particular unit, whether attached or assigned. It is a great opportunity to gain some very insightful knowledge. I cut out the first 5 minutes of her phone call with me because we were just discussing the port that the U.S. is supposed to be building in the Mediterranean off the coast of Gaza. However, after that, we dove into lots of things, everything from the humanitarian aid crisis to child soldiers to displaced people within the Gaza Strip and her personal experiences of what she has seen on the ground. I hope you stick around because this gets pretty spicy. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, my talk with Maya. You know, Hamas is hijacking all the supplies. They're shooting people that are going after the supplies. And so they're not getting to where they need to go. And I just read this morning that now more aid is crossing into the Gaza Strip than pre-October 7. So
yeah, they're bringing like 800 trucks a day. It's the amount of aid that's coming in now. It's amazing. But only a percentage of that is getting to people because the trucks are getting hijacked and people are being extorted that even if they get their hands on things that they have to turn it into central supply zones, basically that Hamas is setting up. And if somebody will report you that you didn't give your supplies, they'll come after your family.
Right. And then some of the supplies that do make it out, people are like hacking it on the street for ridiculous amounts of money. I saw generators being sold out in the market. I've seen food. And then I actually showed a video earlier of people that are out making shawarmas.
Well, I saw the pictures too of the starving children and it's heartbreaking. In my experience, I've not been to a region in Gaza where there's no food to eat. So that's surprising to me, but I don't know. Maybe it's just something that I haven't seen because I don't have all the experience. But the MREs that the U.S. dropped for free. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to the American taxpayer, but to the Gazans.
Yep.
It's being sold for like, you can't even imagine, like 800, 900 U.S. dollars.
What? Where do the people have money to buy this crap?
They don't. They know somebody. But like the street value of an MRE from Hamas, like the price tag, like 800, 900 US dollars.
So I showed a video earlier. I'm going to try to find it. It was from Shai 13 rating Shifa. And at the very end of the video, what they end up showing is a shit ton of money that they ended up finding inside this office. And it was essentially gift cards that they had it. I'm gonna put it up on the screen so you can see it. I don't know if you're around for this, but they have these little gift cards and envelopes to where they're actually handing out cash to people, is what it would appear to be, that they're actually handing out cash to people in order to buy shit. So is this them just lining their own pockets with their own money, like selling stuff for ridiculous rates and handing out money to people so that they can buy it, and then it goes right back into Hamas hands so they look great?
Yeah, basically. So they look good. Because there's a lot of unrest. Obviously, they're not going to show it in their own propaganda videos. And if you're going to protest, you're putting your life at risk. But people are tired of the war and they just want Hamas to, not everyone, obviously, but a lot of people, they just want Hamas to surrender. They want it to be over. They want to sleep at night and just know that, like, this is over. So there is a lot of bad feeling among the Gazans that Hamas is not taking care of them, but they're taking care of themselves. So I think they're trying to kind of rehab their image.
Well, sure. And what's your, I'm curious, what is your take on Rafah? Like, when I look at that, I see Netanyahu basically saying, we're going, period, end of discussion.
We have to go in there. We have to go in there. That's where they, I mean, most, I'm not saying anything that's classified, but like most of the intelligence that we have is that any remaining living hostages, as well as many of the bodies, are being held in Rafah.
Sure.
And that's where they've moved, basically. They're there. I don't know. Maybe they smuggled out Sinwar somewhere, but he's probably in Rafah, and the Israeli people are not done. And they're enraged that the U.S. is trying to meddle in their elections. Nobody's happy with Netanyahu. Everybody is like, it's crazy that this happened on his watch. But now is not the time for that. And there's a unity government across the board. Benny Gantz, who would be the person who would take over from him, is in the exact same place. Like, he holds in the same way. It's a pretty united dot down the line and across the board that we have to go in and we have to end it now.
Right. And is Hezbollah still being portrayed as a threat once y'all go into Rafah, or once IDF goes into Rafah?
Yeah. Yeah. They're making noise up north.
Yeah. And I mean, you see the daily attacks and everything else that's going on, but you know, I picture Hezbollah is a much larger issue than what's in Rafah. Now, obviously, Rafah has hostages and it's got tons of Hamas fighters in it, but you also have a crap ton of Hezbollah fighters along the Lebanese border. So I see the IDF essentially launching a pre-attack on Hezbollah before they even go into Rafah.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you know how they took out the Egyptian Air Force before, I think, what was the Six-Day War? No. The 67 War, like they preemptively struck and they took out the Egyptian Air Force.
Correct.
So I see something like that happening as well, because it would make no sense to turn our backs on Hezbollah just to go after Rafah and then be like, oh no, they actually attacked us. Like, I think everybody knows that the reality is Hezbollah is itching for a fight. They've been waiting since 2006 and they have been just stockpiling away while we were like, okay, they're not making trouble, so we're going to leave them alone. And it's going to happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if Israel struck first up north, and because they have a lot of troops up there now. Right. I mean, that's not either secret. It's been in the media that, like, Golani's been moving up north.
Correct.
And we're working more with special operators.
Right. Along with artillery, tanks. I mean, like, there's plenty of pictures circulated online of that. And Netanyahu has openly stated that he wants his people to be able to return up north because they've been displaced essentially this entire time. And until Hezbollah is dealt with, they're not going to be able to do that.
Right. And then they just opened up the south. Like, all the refugees from the south, from the Gaza envelope, they've sent them back home now. I mean, anyone who wants to go back. So they really want to be able to send people back home in the north. But, you know, Hezbollah has to be dealt with first.
And I really sincerely hope they do. And I hope, like, Netanyahu has the cojones to go in and attack Rafah during Ramadan, like within the next week. I really do. I hope.
I don't think he harbors sympathy for the holiday.
No.
I think it's more of ironing out the diplomatic side, because at the end of the day, we are somewhat at the mercy of the United States in terms of money and supply. So we could, you know, die on this hill. But I think that's really what's happening now, is that they are securing support, even if we go against what the stated U.S. preference is, that they know that we're going to have the support of the international community to whatever extent they'll be able to, you know, to show that support before they go ahead and do anything.
Well, BB's not going to get the support from Biden to go into Rafah. Like, from the Biden administration, he's not going to
get it. He's never going to get a public green light, but I think, but worst case scenario for us would be if we went into Rafah and they cut off aid. Because that would be bad. We only have so many bullets.
Sure.
And especially if there's the North, you know. So I think he just, right now, it's like, you know, the change in rhetoric, I guess, coming from the United States, from like, oh, you know, unilateral support for whatever, you know, we want to do, to don't go into Rafah, don't attack during Ramadan. Like, I think there's a lot of talk between the governments to ensure that they'll have our back in terms of supply.
Have you seen the video of Biden in the 90s? Now, this is like 30 years ago, right? When he went on a tirade speech about how we can't force Israel to do stuff that they don't want to do. And why should we, when Hamas is this huge terror organization, you know, and on and on and on. Like, huge. It's like a 5-minute rant about how we need to support Israel regardless of what they decide on doing. And Israel can do whatever the hell they want to do anyway. So we should.
Yeah.
Versus,
I never saw that video, but I'm not surprised because Clinton even said that he had a conversation with like Arafat, who is the father of this whole idea of, you know, Palestinian liberation. And he had said to him, like, do you accept that Jews are going to stay here and have a right to live here as well? And he just looked him in the eyes and he said, no, we're going to fight till every Jew is gone. And then he said, we can't broker a peace process with someone who won't come to the table. So I think in that time, the thinking was a lot clearer that it's an existential enemy. Not that we want to wipe them out, but they want to wipe us out.
Right.
So now the pressure's on because it affects his own election and because we have to be PC and pretend that everybody is an equal partner. Whereas I think back then there was more of an understanding of this is not two equal sides coming to the table.
No, not at all. And it's really freaking sad. To be perfectly honest with you, to sit there from the outside and watch all this crap unfold. And we're hosting people. Oh, here, I found it. So it was in 1992 when Biden was a senator speaking out against the policies that he himself today as president in 2024 is implementing. And it's a short excerpt from the speech. This one's about a minute 42. I'm going to put it up on the screen and play it for people at home just so they understand what the hell I'm talking about. But this is Biden just going off about freaking Hamas.
Is there any incentive for the Arabs to make any compromise in the peace talks? Why, if they know that they must only wait for the United States will do their bargaining for them, why would they compromise? Why would they be reasonable? The absurd notion that publicly vilifying Israel will somehow change its policy. Who in the hell do we think we're dealing with?
And like, that's the gist of it. Like, he's basically saying, who the hell do we think we are for publicly vilifying Israel for doing what they need to do? And for some reason, he's somehow changed his stance when, again, the Hamas propaganda is publicly vilifying Israel for everything they're doing inside the Gaza Strip. And it's 100% about votes. 1,000% it's about Biden's votes.
Yeah. It's crazy. I just saw somebody in the comments said, like, commented on me saying we only have so many bullets, and they were like, y'all have nukes. Like, we're not nuking Gaza. First of all the fallout would come back on Israel.
Right.
So we're not poisoning our own people, but also like just not happening, whether or not there are nukes.
Second of all, it does take money. And I'm wondering myself why Israel just doesn't secure a loan and just start buying all the shit that they need to go and take care of them as opposed to waiting for.
Honestly, Israel is a scrappy country and like I'm coming home soon. It doesn't mean like, you know, I'm stepping away because I might go back. and I still care about it. But like, I think ultimately the resolve of the Israeli people and being spoken through Netanyahu, I don't think that if America was to say, you know, no, we can't support this, that they're going to stop now. I don't see any realistic resolution other than finishing them off.
Right. Well,
come off, I mean, not the Palestinians.
Right. Well, Biden's not going to do it. Like, Biden's not going to give support for this. He's already suffering in his voter base right now. So he's not going to give support for it. He's suffering on like his views for Ukraine. He's essentially pissed off, you know, the people that want Ukraine that might, or that don't want funding to go to Ukraine that he might be able to swing. He wants funding to go into Ukraine. And then on the same side on Israel, you know, the Democrats that want Biden to stop supporting Israel, he wants to continue to do so, but now he's just kind of like switching his play on it. Just, we don't agree with Rafa. Like, are you kidding me?
I think, yeah, it's so weird to me because so many people, especially like if they were being, if knowing that I have far more limited intelligence than what Biden has access to, and knowing what I know about the movement of people,
right,
like people have come back up north, like this whole raid again on Shifa Hospital, like
correct,
you think after all the media coverage of how they bombed the hospital, everybody was gone. No, guess what? There's thousands of people there.
But they didn't even bomb the hospital.
No, they didn't. But I'm like, no, they didn't. But I'm saying like, it's not like it's a ghost town up north. Like everybody has, not everybody, but a lot of people have come back. Rafah is not like the only population center in all of Gaza. And they've now had over a month of advance notice that the IDF is coming in along with targeted raids. Like this is not the first time they've seen an IDF soldier in Rafah. It's not going to be. So like, I don't understand why all of this attention is concentrating on not going into Rafah unless they're just trying to hamstring the whole operation, which, it doesn't make any sense to me because I know as a dual citizen that Israel is the first line of defense for the West.
Right.
Whatever they hate about Israel, they hate about America too. And they're coming. They've arrived.
They have. I just showed it. So Hezbollah fighter caught on the border in the United States last week.
Yeah. So if they're not scared bleepless of the force of the force of response from the West, they're going to run all over us.
I just think that, well, number one, there's a false narrative that's been pushed about Rafah as well, because it wasn't since the early days of the war that people were told to go down to Rafah. That rally point, if you will, where they got told to go, completely changed once the IDF figured out Hamas was moving hostages and everybody like right down the evacuation corridor. And they switched the evacuation corridor and they switched the location they were telling everybody to go to. And that's been happening for months now. And yet there's a false narrative that's still floating around that, no, you told us to go in there and you told us to be safe. Yeah, like months ago, we told you to get the hell out of there, though. Same thing that happened in Khan Yunus, where they told them to get the hell out of there, and they stayed.
Right. And they're showing all these tent cities. The tent cities that they're showing about people camping in Rafah, they're calling it the Rafah refugee camp. It's not even in Rafah. It's like kilometers to the west. Like, it's much closer to the shore.
Well, the refugee camps in general inside of all of the Palestinian territory is BS, to be perfectly clear. They're all BS.
Right.
They're not really refugee camps by any traditional standard. They were essentially born into it. They're like actual hard structures, buildings, families. They live their entire lives there. And they keep their refugee status so that UNRWA can keep their job and keep funding Hamas and all the other crap and supplies. It's just all BS. The entire thing is just like a very thin shell of BS. And it needs salt.
I mean, the whole idea also about like, if you support Israel, you support white supremacists. Like, it makes me laugh. And I like to have like a dignified discussion with people, but I'm like, actually by percentage, more Palestinians are blonde haired and blue eyed, like their Syrian cousins, than Israelis.
Right.
Sorry.
It blows my mind how people are looking at this conflict now. Like, it scares me for America, to be perfectly honest with you, that we did fight a very long global war on terror against assholes just like this. And for some reason, nobody cares anymore.
Did you know that even if you have a 401k for retirement, you can still have an IRA? Robinhood has the only IRA that gives you a 3% boost on every dollar you contribute when you subscribe to Robinhood Gold. But get this.
Now, through April 30th, Robinhood is even boosting every single dollar you transfer in from other retirement accounts with a 3% match. That's right, no cap on the 3% match. Robinhood Gold gets you the most for your retirement thanks to their IRA with a 3% match. This offer is good through April 30th. Get started at robinhood.com/boost. Subscription fees apply. And now for some legal info. Claim as of Q1 2024, validated by Radius Global Market Research. Investment involves risk, including loss. Limitations apply to IRAs and 401ks. 3% match requires Robinhood Gold for 1 year from the date of first 3% match. Must keep Robinhood IRA for 5 years. The 3% matching on transfers is subject to specific terms and conditions. Robinhood IRA available to U.S. customers in good standing. Like the exact same tactics.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever mentioned, but my family's actually my family's Moroccan, but we emigrated to the U.S. My father was in the military. My brother actually was killed in Iraq. He was a Marine. Wow. So this war on terror is not a new thing to me. So it is surprising to me that Americans have such a short memory.
It's not even a short memory. I don't even think it's a short memory. I think the entire narrative on everything has just been spun so drastically out of control. It's not even funny. The narrative on Iraq, the narrative on Afghanistan, the current narrative of what's going on inside the Gaza Strip, the narrative of what's going on inside Ukraine, all of these narratives seem to be spun in several different ways. And it's really getting old. There's a huge propaganda machine that's pushing all sorts of horrible information out there, probably for money, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's very plausible. Money and power.
Well, it's garbage. It's crap. No. It's crap. And I'm going.
I couldn't agree more.
I'm going to start getting back on TikTok here in a little bit, putting out more and more videos because I stopped doing it. I got a little busy with some other stuff, but I'm going to start crushing it again. And
I'm missing those TikTok videos.
Yeah, it's time. I'm tired of these idiots. The amount of trash that's out there just needs to stop. And the crazy part is when you do put out factual information, people will jump out there and be like, oh, but you're not telling the whole story because of this. It's no, what you're stating is actual propaganda, not facts. It drives me insane.
Right. And that's not to say that there isn't propaganda on the Israeli side. There is. There's propaganda on both sides, but there's a right and a wrong in this conflict.
And Israel truthfully sucks at propaganda. If there was one thing, if there was one thing the United States should provide to Israel is a public affairs officer, we should anything.
I was talking to my friend back in the States and I was like, how is it that the Jews run the media and they run Hollywood and they can't get a freaking PR campaign working in Israel? If we could misstep, we misstep every time.
How? The best video I've seen so far that actually points stuff out. And I like the drone footage going in the tunnels. I feel like the IDF went really heavy on the tunnels. It's bro, we got it. There's hundreds of miles of tunnels. We get it, But when they actually started showing the jail cells and stuff like that, that was huge. That's good. The IDF should be putting that type of stuff out there. But, this recent video from that I just had up on the screen of inside of Shifa, where the guy actually gave bona fides, actually showed the view out the window so people can go and they can look it up on their own and see that, all the stuff is inside the Shifa hospital. And then people just accuse them of planting it. It's dude, I don't even know.
Sure. We're lugging all these computer systems with us and all these weapons that came from Russia.
Right.
We don't even have our people.
You don't need to keep it. People accuse them of, carrying drop guns or drop weapons, so you can smoke people and then leave weapons behind and say they don't know. It's stupid. As a matter of fact, I was, who the heck was it? I don't remember and I'm not going to say. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But, I do remember a couple of Afghans that were trying to do that crap. And they're like, just in case we need them. It's dude, we never needed them. There's so many freaking terrorists. You don't need them. There's just shitheads. Don't worry about it. Just let it happen. Yeah. So it's insane to me that they think that way. It's troubling. And all of the weapons, and here's the other crazy part that people are also failing to understand, after 4 months of conflict inside of Gaza, you would think that the Hamas stockpiles would have been depleted at this point. So, so if the IDF's having trouble getting munitions, where do you think Hamas is getting them from? They're being smuggled in.
Yeah.
I promise you, there's a huge chunk of them that are probably being smuggled in on those aid trucks, not to mention a couple tunnels that we haven't discovered yet. But I don't think very much of that, but primarily probably through a lot of those aid trucks, which is why Hamas is going after and grabbing them, because they're pulling their crap out of it that they need. And then they are distributing stuff, and then they're, you know, hawking it for ridiculous amounts or whatever. So I'm over it. You know, I'm over all this crap. Like, they just need to start cracking down. I really wish the IDF would stop playing politics and just be like, you know what, world, you're wrong. And I'm going to prove it to you. We have estimated 100 hostages left alive. Why do we need a ceasefire to get our people back? Never in the...
I know.
Never do you ever negotiate with people that are taking damn hostages. In the peace deal that Hamas wanted in Egypt, in Cairo last week and the week before, it was like 6 or 10 to 1.
Yeah, they wanted like 1,200 hostages back.
It's insane.
Which we gave them for Gilad Shalit, Sinwar was one of those people.
Right, but not only that, they want the IDF to completely withdraw from the Gaza Strip. It's not going to happen. So there is no peace talk. There is no ceasefire agreement, because Israel is never going to withdraw. Netanyahu is never going to approve to withdraw all the IDF from the Gaza Strip. He's already said they're going to be there for 10 years. So just get it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. Go in there and spank these idiots. Get your people back before they die.
Yeah, actually, my cousin was hostage until 2 days ago. They came and told us that he was deceased, based on information that they had. He was a tank commander, and he was kidnapped on October 7th from his tank with two other guys. And they just told us 2 days ago, they came and they said that based on intelligence they have and forensic evidence, they don't think he's alive anymore. So they authorized the funeral and everything. And at the, and like afterwards, everybody was just saying, like, just go in. Like, we waited 162 days for them to tell us he's dead. Like, just go in, and whoever's alive, we'll get back. And whoever's not alive, we'll be able to bury a body. Like, let's do it. Like, they still have his body. We have to bury an empty casket. It's so crazy that there's any hesitation. No other country would let this happen.
That's like, I'm speechless at that. And it's like, first of all, I'm sorry to hear that. Second, if it was my brother, my sister, my fellow service member, my fellow citizen, I would much rather them die by my hand trying to get them back than by essentially not doing shit. Because you really start thinking about what's going through their minds. You know, they've been in captivity for how many days?
I think about those girls who are my 164 days today.
164.
Who are my age. And I'm like, they knew going in, we're going to come after them. Israel's going to come get them back. But how do they feel 6 months in being abused on the daily and nothing? They don't hear anything. They don't see anything. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like for them, whoever's still alive.
Right. What's going through their brains
has to be hell.
What's going through their brains has got to be hell. And like, if anything, for that reason of what's being done to those people and the mental torture they're going through right now. Like, let's say even they didn't have physical torture taking place, which we all know is BS that it's happening. But let's say like even that was removed and they were just physically being held, even being fed, everything else, but nothing else is going on. And they're just left in there with these freaking radical Islamists. Like, the amount of mental crap that would do to you. I don't give two shits about the civilians in Rafah and how they're feeling. They can get the hell out of the way. They can get up and they can walk.
Some of them are holding hostages. Yeah, they could get up and leave. They could. They should.
But they won't. And so again, I'm tired of it. You know, I saw a video of like some kid that was shooting fireworks the other day and he ended up getting sniped. And I forget what the hell he was shooting him at. But yeah, some idiot kid shooting fireworks, trying to set shit on fire. And he ends up getting sniped. And that was making its way around the internet. People are like, oh my God, they're shooting this kid. Like, no, he's an arsonist trying to set a building on fire. And his parents know what he's up to. all like that, that is the most disturbing part about this entire war to me.
Yeah. And I think people don't know, like, they, you know, they, we're counting our soldiers, obviously, as we lose them. And thank God, like, casualties have not been so incredibly high. I mean, it's been more, mostly lost in a war since the War of Independence, but they, the amount of in catastrophic injuries, over 10,000 amputees since October 7th. And like, that's a life altering injury. And so much of it is like, they set these like rubble traps. Like, you know how they used to talk about like in the Viet Cong, they used to set like the spike traps. So they're setting these things like in the rubble, and it's children building them. Like, this is what they do on their Tuesday afternoon because they're not in school. They set, you know, traps to break legs, and they like, they stick like, they use like rebar or whatever, they sharpen it and they stick it in like donkey dung so that it causes infection. Like, and people don't realize like what it's chaos here. Like, I'm saying, it's as organized as it can be when it's an urban, when it's urban warfare, but you know, 13-year-old kid is not just a 13-year-old kid. And it feels terrible to say that, but that's what the reality that we're facing. And for every child that has to die, we know that they were brought up in this propaganda, and there's not like hatred or ill will, but the reality is that they are also the enemy.
You know, the youngest, I will call him a combatant, that we killed, and there's a pair of them, were probably 10 years old, maybe. And people, and I'm talking about like holding AKs, shooting, like actually fighting. And I don't think people understand that they're it's more than acceptable. And that a lot of these,
you see them, you know, they only post the part of the screaming and wailing mothers where they're crying, but they don't tell you that before, immediately before the video and immediately after, she's saying, "Thank God my child is a martyr."
Right. Right. And I've showed it on this channel before too, where you have mothers that are like, "No, I'm raising my kids to be martyrs." And like, here's the messed up part too. I'm gonna open this up and see if I can pull it up on my screen. Put it up on the screen for everybody. Martyr. It's a noun. A person who is killed because of their religious or other beliefs. And so everybody that is calling these people that are dead martyrs, they believe that they're dying for their religious beliefs. And again, when you start talking about religion being one of the primary freaking things that you like, motivators, because it doesn't matter the laws of man at that time, it matters the law of their God. That's what they believe. They believe it's okay. It's okay to give my kid an AK to go shoot at Israelis or Americans or whoever. It's okay to clack myself off in the middle of a market. It's okay to do these things because I'm doing it for God. And what better honor for some of these moms than to raise a bunch of martyrs? And it messes up the soldiers that have to deal with it. And it messes up the families. It messes everything up. The way they go about it, like, it is such a mental F to be put in that situation.
It's horrendous. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have, we carry weapons, but I've never had to be behind the gun. But we provide aid to anyone who's in our zone. So a lot of times we're providing aid to Palestinians who are hurt, shrapnel, or like from, you know, debris or whatever, even if they just, you know, cut themselves on rubble. So we'll provide aid. My son is Moroccan, so I understand Arabic. And the hatred that they spew to your face while you're treating them, it's so hard to mentally separate from me, who lost family in October 7th, and now my cousin Danielle, like, to know that these people like hate me and want to see me dead and supported October 7th and still try to see them as just a civilian, you know, I'm just a civilian. I'm helping a civilian. And I think that people don't give enough, you know, credit. I know we call ourselves the most moral army in the world, and maybe that's a bit pretentious, but we try really hard. And people are just saying, oh, baby killers. I mean, I know they say that about the U.S. military also. I'm like, we're not baby killers, but you can't be blind to the age if somebody is a combatant.
Right. No, you can't.
You have to be blind to the age, just by men.
Here's the other thing that a lot of people don't know. So I had an Israeli soft guy on here. I gave him an interview a week and a half ago and kind of talked through his experiences. And one of the things that he said, you know, was he spent 4 months inside Gaza, but never once did he legitimately know who he was shooting at. Like, he never physically saw his enemy combatant. This is an Israeli soft guy running around the Gaza Strip. And I have very few times in my military career, and again, I've got about 4 years in combat, and I have very few times in my career where I was like, there he is, and shoot him. So a lot of the times, you know, the IDF is returning fire, or, you know, they get a blip on ISR or whatever that shows, you know, an enemy combatant carrying a weapon moving into a building. And unless they have something there to reference height, you know, and age and everything else, most of the time they don't. They're returning fire and they're killing whoever is doing this. And then they go down on the far side and then they end up going, oh shit, it's a kid. Or, oh, it's a grown man.
Yeah. Oh, you know, we set up in a building and we found a very interesting pamphlet that is basically to teach kids the different patches that we wear. So they come and they're like, oh, I have a cut on my hand. Can you bandage it? And then they're looking at all the people behind me because I just wear a medic patch. And they're taking down information. Then they take it right back home and they say, this is how many people were there.
Correct.
This is what unit they're from. Mm-hmm. This is their specialty. And it's just wild to me that, like, every time I think I know what's happening, there's a whole nother layer.
There is a layer.
Like, this time this kid wasn't shooting at me. You know, I thought this kid just needed help. And no, they want to come kill my team.
Correct. That's all they're trying to do is like gather intel and information. The part that really pisses me off, and like I realize, like I, you know, I've seen plenty of children combatants, but like there was a day where we had a couple of them get killed, and the mother actually shows up and starts accusing us of just indiscriminately killing her children. And so part of my team went up there and took her ass up to where the kids got killed and showed the bodies and the weapons and everything else. And then drug the bodies back to where we were at because they're Muslim. And we handed off every spare bandage that we had because these kids were tore up. We handed off every freaking spare bandage that we had. And you could smell these bodies from like a mile away. As you know, and these are hardened like Afghan commandos that are like wrapping these kids up with our spare bandages who were enemy combatants. To give back to the mother who's standing over there so that she could go bury him. And the whole, like, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't until that moment where I've got my partner force wrapping up these dead kids and a mother standing 10 feet away watching everything go down. It wasn't until that moment that I realized it is the parents' fault. They are children. Yeah. You put those thoughts in their mind. You okay them to go do dumb things. You talk about this crap. You're doing this crap. And they were fighting for ISIS, by the way. But it's like, it's the parents' fault. Like those parents ought to be automatically apprehended the moment their kid does something stupid. Because they're the ones that are teaching them that crap.
Yeah. I agree. And I have that. I try to keep that empathy anytime I see, like, you know, if I see someone killed or apprehended or hurt, I always try to think like it's not their fault. It's not their fault because you don't want to become immune to that feeling because children should be innocent. So I try to always remind myself that even if this one isn't, like, they were indoctrinated, you know, they weren't born this way. They're not bad people.
You know, and
it's really hard.
And it's something else that like took me a while to understand as well, like fighting the enemy was, and I've stated it before, I know you've heard me say this, that if I was born inside the Gaza Strip as a Palestinian and I was raised with all the Hamas propaganda and everything else, given my background and my fighting spirit, it is very likely that I would be one of those radical Islamists that probably would have taken place on October 7th. Right? But that doesn't make it okay.
Right.
And that's how people are like looking at the situation, is they're like, well, picture it from their point of view. I'm like, I have for years. And it's still not okay. If I was out murdering, raping, kidnapping, taking hostages, beating people, dragging bodies through streets, murdering, yeah, somebody should shoot me. And yet people don't see it that
way. And I would say also, no, they don't. Well, that's what I was going to say, that I'll say also for me as an American, I know I don't sound so American, but give me a week in America and I'll have no accent. I just, English wasn't my first language. So when I'm not around English, it goes away. But they, the one thing that for me is a big sticking point in America is that Israelis from around the world dropped everything they were doing and went home to fight in this war.
Correct.
It didn't matter if they just spent thousands of dollars on a vacation, if they've been living in America for 12 years, they went home.
Facts.
American Arabs who are standing in America in the streets screaming about how there's a genocide in Palestine. So go home, get on a plane, go to Egypt and do something about it. Go to Jordan, do something about it. Go to Israel, do something about it. I'm saying I'm not inviting terrorists to Israel, but I'm just saying, like, what are you doing standing in America? Like, you have, you no honor. You're standing in America saying, screaming and yelling. Like, you were not, you're not there. You're not fighting the good fight. Like, what do you, how do you even know what you're talking about? I understand people in Gaza being angry, picking up weapons, fighting this fight. I understand that. And as, you know, deplorable as it is, I have respect in a twisted way for that. I have no respect for people in the West screaming and yelling about genocide in Palestine.
They audit. I'm with you 1,000%. If you believe in it that deeply, get off your ass and go over there and see what's going on and decide whether or not you want to do something about it. Because it's war. So
yeah,
pick up a gun and go die for what you believe in. And that is something that I will always have the respect for my enemy, that at least they believe in what they're doing to the extent that they're willing to give their lives for it. So they will always have my respect on that level. Doesn't mean I agree with what they're doing, but at least they have the balls to do that. And that's what kind of pisses me off about a lot of these protesters and everybody else that's out here in the United States, like holding up flags. Like most of them couldn't even point to Israel on a map, let alone show them Israel and then point to me on that where Gaza's at, identify the West Bank, and then tell me the surrounding countries. You know, it just pisses me off. Like they really should get off their ass. And we've offered to buy people plane tickets on this show.
I know, I heard, and I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yep, but they won't.
No, they won't. And what's crazy is they can't even handle hearing things that offend them.
Correct.
Which blows my mind.
Correct. And I get it all the time on the show as well, where I say something that somebody doesn't agree with and they're offended, regardless of how factual it is, they get offended and they're like, oh God, I can't get behind this. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry you don't agree with everything we're saying, but it's fact-based. So there's too many people that don't even care about facts, that are so caught up in their feelings or have been so convinced that one thing is a certain way and they are willing to die on that platform regardless of the information that's put out in front of them, that they just want to die on that platform.
Like the fact, like the death count in Gaza, that, you know, all these statisticians coming out and saying that, you know, it makes absolutely no sense. The numbers like are increasing on a, like a perfect scale. It's statistically impossible for those numbers to not vary as, you know, in any way. And it's not something that we haven't known. Like we've only been taking the numbers at face value because no one's going to listen to us if we start trying to say like, oh, it's not actually how many people died, but it's just garbage. And people just are like, you know, 50,000 people have died and 30,000 of them are children. Like, really? How quickly do you think they could count bodies? We're still counting bodies from 6 months ago. We still don't know how many people died.
Yeah, they can't. They don't know any better. I mean, they can't. There's no way. It's impossible.
All right.
And then they'll do, well, it's reported. That's what's going through the hospitals. Well, look at the damn doctors in the hospital. you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, Maya, it was good talking to you. Good catching up. What time?
Oh, yeah, sorry. That was more than 5 minutes.
What time is it over there? No, it's been exactly 45 minutes. So you are, you have exceeded the standard by 9. So good on you though. It was a good conversation. People were loving it. So I just let it happen.
Yeah. It's 7:05 PM.
Yeah. Nice. 7:05 PM. Not too bad. Not too bad. Well,
yeah.
Stay safe. You are always welcome to call in. Promise you'll get back on TikTok and start doing TikTok things. But yeah, more people need to hear your
voice.
Here.
I've always played your podcast. Sometimes like my unit is listening in, and I don't know if you know any of the IDF units, but look up 669.
Okay.
And I'm attached to their, I'm their medic. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. You know,
thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, of course. No, thank you for calling in and like sharing your guys' side, because it's just truthfully not ever heard, and it drives me nuts. There's far too much BS being put out by the Palestinian side and nothing really coming out on the IDF side other than official statements and accounts and, you know, whatever. And it's, again, the IDF sucks at PR. Let's be real.
Yeah, they do. Maybe in my next life, I'll be a PR strategist for them.
Right. All right.
All right. Have a good one.
Yeah, take care.
Take care.
Bye. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I want to thank Maya for calling in and giving us her perspective and everybody in the IDF that is currently fighting radical Islamic terror inside of the Gaza Strip. And good luck to you. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, peace, love, happiness, and God bless. I'm out of here.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.